This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Parenthetically, guys, of course, there's this practice or procedure from the one, the only Kevin Randall, all about chasing footnotes. We have a lot of these cases published, which have based on another published version of the case, based on another version. And it's kind of sort of like you whisper a joke into somebody's ear, they whisper it into the next person's ear, and five generations later, there's no resemblance. And so when he traces some of these cases back to their source material, a lot of significant things may have changed.
That's true. And anyone that tried to rely on my account of the C.B. Moore case, you know, I got the name of, I forgot the name of the equipment, you know, the shape of the thing. I think, you know, in broad strokes, I got it there, but I wouldn't want that to be delivered in a court of law and say, you know, this is what happened. You know, it's close, but it's a representation of it. And I know exactly what he's talking about because, say, in the Cash Lantern case, there's a UFO in the road blocking their progress. It's flaming. They're afraid. They stop. Well, then when a different author comes to describe that, because we don't have a really good account from the witness, you know, it's like, why did you stop? What did you do? So sometimes it's like, well, they stopped paralyzed in fear. Okay. And Jerome Clark, he writes, well, they stopped and the road was, the ditches were too muddy and the road was too narrow to turn around in the dark. Another one comes and says, well, it was such a blinding light that the driver was unable to see to get away. What you're dealing with is this interpretation. And that's just one example. And, you know, especially if you take this over a whole story and, you know, the Cash Lantern case had a lot of the moving parts to it. You know, it just becomes multiplied and the more it's repeated and magnified.
You're pretty much an authority on that case, though, too. So when you get all of this information and look at it and cross-reference it, are you coming away with it going, well, we don't know. Maybe nothing happened. I don't see that personally. I think it all adds up to something mysterious really did happen. But what's your take on it?
I think more than likely there's a genuine event. However, ufologists got a hold of this case. But in sort of two stages. It wasn't reported right away. It sat for weeks. And then when it finally was reported, it was a disreputable ufologist at APRO got a hold of the story, collected details, and we don't know what he told the witnesses, and it was sold to the Weekly World News. And this was before they went full on Bat Boy. So it was still this, it was transitioning to the National Enquirer, went in color. They wanted to do something with their black and white press. And so they took over the kind of weird stories. And it was actually reported fairly accurately as far as we know. But the involvement of this ufologist, who I'll go ahead and name, it was Bill English. He's the guy that promoted the story of Project Blue Book 13. And as far as we know, there wasn't a Blue Book 13, but he has all these cases, all these dramatic cases of human mutilation and who knows what are all supposed to be in it. So he's one of the sensationalists and probably fabulists that were involved in this. So, and one of the things we do know that Vicki Landrum said that he told that since there had been a UFO and the symptoms Betty Cash was having, oh, well, this was radiation and it was probably going to kill her, which caused a lot of distress to Vicki Landrum. And she was already trying to get help for her friend. So, then, once it was in the hand of the tabloids, well, English apparently just kind of abandoned it. And the witnesses were like, where's the help and the researchers that we thought we would, you know, assist us? They called again and eventually got John Schuessler got a hold of the case. But this was weeks later. All this time had passed. The tabloid story was already out. And John Schuessler, I think he was certainly well-intentioned. You know, he was basically the co-founder of MUFON. He had a group, and his whole perspective on things was that UFOs were space vehicles, and his investigation was based on that premise. He thought maybe abduction might have been involved and had Vicki Landrum hypnotized to uncover a hidden memory if that were the case. So, you know, he was using all these standard UFO tools. There was no basically an impartial investigation. So much of the information that came out was distorted quickly. And in this case, remember, John Schuessler he worked for McDonnell Douglas, but at the Johnson Space Center in NASA. So to the witnesses, he's the NASA guy. And, you know, he measures the scene and, you know, estimates. And pretty soon, whatever he's sort of interpreting what they said, that becomes their version of the story. If he says, well, you know, it was 90 feet across, well, then that's their estimate. They think he should know, and it replaces their own story. It's overwritten. So since it's, and I can point out the particular examples of that.
What did it all come down to, though, when you sifted all of this out? I mean, are we just looking at sheer fiction, or did these people actually have an experience that you think is genuine that can't be explained?
It is most likely a genuine experience, and but it's been magnified and distorted. So I don't think we'll ever get to the truth of that. And that's sort of like, it is a case worth studying for that aspect. You know, is this the biggest missed opportunity because of the tampering, the footnotes thing that the Gmail?
Oh, that is really a really interesting angle on the whole thing. Yeah, definitely. I mean, even if whether something happened or not, just from that perspective, it could be interesting to as a case for the books, for sure. I see what you're saying there. Before you go, we want to get you to tell us just a little bit about your projects too, starting with Blue Blurry Lines and exactly sort of what that is and when you started it and what it's about.
Well, we mentioned Jim Moseley earlier. So I was talking to him on the phone regularly, sending things into him, to Saucer Smear, and he had asked me to look into the Cash Landrum case, and I was sending him more material than he could use. You know, he had, basically a monthly newsletter, and he couldn't devote all this space. So, and there were other things that he asked for. So I said, well, you know, I've got to do something with this. So the first thing that I actually put out was something about, an article on, Leon Davidson, who was a early UFO researcher, and had interacted with the Moseley and Saucer News, and he was he had quite an interesting number of run-ins with the Air Force because he was so aggressive, and you know, he thought they knew much more than they were saying, you know, to the extreme.
Dr. D, the mysterious Dr. D.
That's him. Exactly.
I met him once or twice with Jim, and he seemed like a presentable gentleman who was living, I think, in White Plains, New York. I do not remember what he looked like, but he came out with that book, that Project Blue Book special report with an introduction. Yeah. But I think he was one of the people who believed in UFOs being test weapons and influenced Jim Moseley's early theories on the subject. Oh, well, we're just remembering the past so that we don't forget it. We got some more segments, three more segments to spend with Kurt Collins. And a reminder, if you want to check out our new store, theparacast.shop, for branded merchandise, T-shirts, and all that good stuff, theparacast.shop. Gene Randall, Curtis, you're in.
The Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with Reputation Defender. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with Reputation Defender. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771. For your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with Reputation Defender. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771.
We depend on our drinking water supply daily, but where does that water come from? Your water provider encourages you to get to know your local water source so together we can protect and preserve it. The investments we make as a community to protect our water source now ensure we have a sustainable drinking water supply for the future. Visit drinktap.org to learn more. This message is brought to you by the American Water Works Association and your local water provider.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of my pillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented my pillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My pillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon you'll need a plan and place to survive. Forget bunkers. You're not a live-underground gopher. You need Survivalist Camps, the ultimate fully functional, off-the-grid mobile survival bug-out house that's well-equipped and custom-built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Bold statement, you bet. See them now at survivalistcamps.com. That's survivalistcamps.com. Trust your family's survival to survivalistcamps.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So, back to Dr. Leon Davidson. Kirk Collins, go ahead.
Well, as it happens, an article on his theories of UFO propulsion was my very first Blue Blurry Lines article. And from there, I quickly went into using some of the material that I had gathered with Jim Mosley in mind when he'd asked me for some cash planning details. So that was how I got my start with that. And it was from early on, it was almost exclusively devoted to the cash planning research. Over the years, I started gathering, saying, what are all the documents I could find? And my holy grail was the original MUFON case file with the interviews with the witnesses. And after years of searching, I finally got that. So I put together on the site now a directory of all the resources on the case, some of the letters between the researchers and things. There's a real, I think, substantial the documents are there for everyone to read, and you can easily see that sort of the almost fairy tale version that gets put into a television version. And by the way, Ancient Aliens recently did a segment on the case, and of course it was real simplified, and it was all one sided. And as the sort of the popular legend of the case is that this was a craft that was of either alien or military design that was leaking nuclear radiation. And once you look at the medical records, the portions of them that are available, it doesn't hold up to that. For the symptoms produced, for that to have been the case, it would have been a lethal dose, and the victims would have died within probably hours. So it's a great puzzle. And so I'm enjoying, and I managed to, along the way, I interviewed Colby Landrum once. There was another witness who saw a UFO, claims to have seen a UFO that is disturbingly different because it was basically a black triangle the same night. In the city they lived in, and he's convinced it's connected, but maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. It's certainly worth examining. So that's how I got my start, the kind of information that I present there. But I did branch out into other UFO cases and some historical material, which eventually led to this separate project. It overlaps, but Saucers of Time for God is, I do that with Claude Falkstrom, and he's produced just an incredible number of newspaper articles that, what's really special about what he does is he tries to track the story. Okay, here's the initial report. Here's the story that as it developed over a few days, and here are letters to the editor, sometimes by the witnesses and participants or other people who saw it. So it follows it as much as we can. I mean, so often you see something like the original Roswell story headlines, and that's all you see. But there's always more, much more to the story.
This is also on your blog, The Blue Blurry Lines, at blueblurrylines.com. Are there clippings and stuff along with the Saucers of Time Forgot on your blog site that people can look at?
Oh yeah, there sure are. So what I usually do is instead of just presenting the clippings, we'll present in narrative form, introduce the players, let the story unfold, and sometimes I'll write a summary because not everyone wants to read, 10 newspaper articles, but they're presented there. And then sometimes there are cases that are so complex, I say, okay, well, I'll put up a separate page with just a series of clippings. If it's something that, especially if it's either the span in years or the deals with the life of some of the individuals, because some of the things we do is also profile early figures, either witnesses or ufologists that have kind of been forgotten, and they have their own story. So those take, much more material. We try to get as legible as copies as possible, but some of the times the print's bad. But in those cases, we'll provide a transcript of them. And some of the stories are great, and there are a number of credible cases. There's some ridiculous hoaxes. There have been some of the colorful characters that are just unbelievable. But it's part of the UFO story, so that's what we're trying to present. And so often you're just getting a narrative that is repeated, you know, for some reason. And this is the original documentation of the case whenever possible.
I just love that stuff from the golden era and the classic. And I mean, people today don't realize what people had to do back then to get information. Today we just Google it. But back then people had to rely on things like newspaper clipping services, where people literally got a pair of scissors out, had to buy a newspaper, cut it out, put it in an envelope, stick a stamp on it, put an address on it, and send it in the mail to people. And that's how people got information like that in those days. And these, I think, are really kind of priceless. And it's really kind of cool that someone like yourself has taken it upon themselves to get that information and make it available for people today to check out. And it's like a trip through time is what it is.
The newspapers are great. One thing that's largely lost is the radio programs. I mean, because there was a lot of coverage on radio. Now, the Wendy Connor's Faded Disc Project is managed to retrieve and preserve a lot of those. And that's now been archived online, or at least most of it has.
I think some of the Frank Edwards stuff is out there, too. Ran across it not too long ago.
Yeah, and Frank Edwards and just about all the major newscasters covered flying saucers, and sometimes we don't have the recordings. Now, a few of them also had newspaper columns where they would take the radio show and turn it in print. So we have some examples of some of those from that. So that's great. And there was a lot of controversy, and you know, it took a while for the extraterrestrial hypothesis to gain any ground. You know, when it was discussed in the 1940s originally, it was mostly, you know, jokey references to men from Mars. And it was, you know, not many people were taking that seriously at the time. There were a few, basically some occultists who already believed that we had visitors from Venus. You know, they were ready to adopt that, but not many. The mainstream, the newspaper people, and as you mentioned, the conclusion the military reached on the extraterrestrial hypothesis is a possibility due to the fact they had eliminated, if these were, you know, truly craft, that, you know, it wasn't made here. So it took, and then the fact that Donald Kehoe had military background and he had sources within the military.
We'll talk more about Kehoe in the next segment with Kurt. Gene, Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Has your body ever gone low blood sugar, feeling weak, shaky, knowing you better eat something fast? We all know high blood sugar can lead to many metabolic problems. At GCNteam.com, we have a healthy blood sugar pack, focusing on the structure and function of stable blood sugar. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Nothing feels worse than unstable blood sugar. Call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
We have Oregon's first case of the COVID-19 coronavirus.
That's Oregon Governor Kate Brown. Health officials there, in California and in Washington State, are worrying about the coronavirus after states are now reporting presumptive cases of 3 people who've been infected by unknown means. The patients, including a high school student in Washington and an elementary school worker in Oregon, had no known close contact with a traveler or infected person. There are 2 similar cases in California. a 65-year-old woman who lives in Santa Clara County, just south of San Francisco. Dr. Sarah Cody is the director of the Santa Clara County Health Department.
The individual is an adult woman with chronic health conditions who is hospitalized for difficulty breathing.
This is USA Radio News.
Does your business spend $500 a month or more on gas and electric bills? Did you know by making a simple free phone call, you can save up to 25% on your bill every month? What could you do with a 25% savings on utility bills every month? Energy deregulation is now available in your state. Making one simple phone call will show you how we can lower your gas and electric bills instantly, with no changes to your bill and no enrollment fee. This is a free service. The only thing you'll notice is a lower bill every month. Call U.S. Power and Light right now. Learn how easy it is to lower your utility bills for your business and save money. We promise. So if you spend over $500 a month on your gas and electric bills, please call right now and unleash your savings.
800-941-3381. 800-941-3381. 800-941-3381. That's 800-941-3381.
If you have diabetes and you're on Medicare, Medicaid, or have private insurance, you may qualify for a new continuous glucose monitor. Managing your diabetes is crucial to your health. The new CGM can automatically and easily help you manage your diabetes more effectively. And by using a CGM, you can eliminate the one thing most people with diabetes dislike the most, finger sticks. Now you can automatically manage your diabetes and end the painful finger sticks. Solara Medical Supplies makes it simple for you to have a new CGM. We'll do all the insurance paperwork for you and deliver the newest in diabetic care technology right to your door. Take charge of your diabetes today with the help of a new continuous glucose monitor. Call now to learn more.
800-547-5331. 800-547-5331. 800-547-5331. That's 800-547-5331.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
Kurt, good that you brought up Major Donald Kehoe, because I think starting with flying saucers, or real flying saucers from outer space, these books, I presume or recall being pretty good sellers, that certainly gave more credibility to flying saucers.
The credibility there, that's the key word, because of his military background, he'd gone to the Naval Academy with some of the people that were actually involved, and he had connections, old classmates that could give him information, possibly even some of the people who were involved in running that estimate of the situation. So he was able to get some of these cases. And remember, especially in the early days, they didn't have a public office it was then a time, Project Sign and Project Grudge, and it was only much later in 52 with the Blue Book that there was public access of any kind to that. So he was getting some of these reports, and they didn't always like the fact that he was able to get them and sharing this information. And of course, the only possibility that he was considering was the extraterrestrial hypothesis. And then I mentioned before about McLaughlin and Moore, when their stories came out, their background, you know, these were, a current scientist, active military, and that was something the newspaper could work with. And, you know, we're seeing the same thing today. I mean, that's the whole reason this ATIP story was marketable to the news media. That's why the New York Times was interested, because you had the Pentagon involvement. The military was involved. You had the retired counterintelligence officer, Luis Elizondo. See, if it was just a UFO researcher going with similar information, they wouldn't be interested. But the fact that Pentagon involvement, official involvement, that gives it this credibility. And if that's what actually makes it, in their eyes, newsworthy.
Gene, did you ever meet any of the radiocasters back in those days, like Frank Edwards?
Sure, Frank Edwards. I was in touch with him briefly.
a few years before he died. But yes, I did meet Frank Edwards and have a chance to talk a bit with him. Certainly, I met Major Keogh a few times, and I've talked about that before. So those are the people I recall meeting. Among them, of course, Gray Barker, Jim Moseley, Dr. D, some of the other people who hung around Jim Moseley, I recall meeting. But if you drop a name, I'll remember even some of the contactees like Dr. Frank Stranges.
Right, yeah, we've heard of him. What's your take on the whole contactee thing, Kurt?
There's ample evidence to show that many of these people were, in essence, performers. Now, there were some of them that were deeply religious. And I think George Adamski's background, he basically had when we say cult, we think of the, you know, extreme and negative versions. But he had this religious group, and he already had these sort of cosmic type beliefs that involved interplanetary thing. And I think when flying saucers came along, he saw a good way to market this. And there's actually examples where people have found some of his old religious writings, and he had scratched through things like, well, I don't know if the word was actually angel, but something like that, and then to write space brother in. So for him, it was a way to retool the message to reach an audience that would otherwise never listen to him.
Yeah.
So I think there's some other people who may have had basically dreamlike or spiritual experiences, and they sincerely believed. I think that explains most, if not all, of them.
Well, with Adamski, he did actually publish a self-published book where I think he met someone like Jesus Christ or something, and that didn't do well, but he had this group of followers. And later on with the Flying Saucer Mystery, he couched everything in terms of meeting this blonde-haired Martian or Venusian, and called Orthon, by the way, and therefore made himself more credible to the flying saucer people. And there's still people today who believe Adamski. In fact, I think somebody offered to come on this show, and I went back and forth and suggested they look at my link to Jim Moseley's George Adamski expose issue from 1957. Never heard back from them.
Uh-huh.
So, well, one of the things we need to look at when we talk about the contactees, and there's some exceptions, but most of these guys, they weren't all guys, there were some women, but mostly men, were from California and involved in, and there was this huge scene from the early 1900s, maybe 1920s. I'm not sure exactly when, but there were all this experimentation with the Middle Eastern religion and theosophy and all sorts of things. And yeah, there's still a huge element of that. You know, the New Age was basically, well, if it wasn't born there, it thrived there, and you know, it's still going strong. And there's a lot of some of the things like Stephen Greer's CE5 is, you know, basically that in a different costume. So it was very easy for them to believe and to put flying saucers into their existing cosmic type beliefs.
I think theosophists, if that's what you can call them, they're the believers in Atlantis.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so they're big into the Bermuda Triangle and underwater submerged objects, you know, unidentified submerged objects. And which reminds me, before you go, there was one thing I was looking at on Blue Blurry Lines there that I thought, well, this seems to be just a little bit unrelated, but maybe not. Tell us a bit about ufology's legacy from Loch Ness.
Oh, okay. Well, A friend, Claude, who works with me on Saucers of Time for God, he recommended this Loch Ness book, and you know, so it was like a year before he sent me a copy, and so finally I broke down and read it, and I thought, wow, this is so much like ufology. We have these people, these dedicated searchers, you know, some had scientific backgrounds, some didn't. And the parallels just really struck me. I mean, there's also a similar timeline. There was more in common with ufology than not. And I just thought, well, this is perfect. And so often people think in ufology, they're dealing with things that are, unique. You know, the ridicule factor, what they see is an attitude of science to reject these possibilities. I mean, it's all there, and just like it'll open your eyes and some people's eyes to the fact that it will give you also a perspective. It's like why science is not so eager to investigate these claims, not so much investigate, but to accept them. On word alone. And another parallel, there were a number of hoaxes for various reasons, some for to local businesses to drive traffic. You know, some was to just get people in the media. And so I tend to think that probably at Loch Ness, it was almost all hoaxes and mistakes, you know, genuine sightings of something, you know, from logs or seals or whatever, even waves, that's a possibility. So I think that there's probably no genuine mystery beneath this one.
Let's break it. We got more to come. Nessie, Kurt, Gene, Randall, you're in.
The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
As you know, neighbors, web hosting can be pretty cheap, but not all hosting is the same. DreamHost wins best of awards year after year. You get unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, and even the low-cost plans put your sites on high-performance SSDs. Want to know more about what DreamHost has to offer? Go to technightowl.com/host. Once again, that's technightowl.com/host.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, rockoids.com.
This is George Norrie from Coast to Coast AM and History Channel's Ancient Aliens. We support the amazing energy, nutrition, and skincare products from Jeunesse. Jeunesse products are designed by leading doctors in their field with natural ingredients and even stem cell technology. These products help your body perform and look better. Shop Jeunesse at GCNlife.com or call 1-844-443-6637. GCNlife.com or 844-443-6637.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNhemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNhemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Thank you.
These are the sounds of someone taking their eyes off the road. Texting while driving is more than distracting. It's dangerous. Do yourself a favor. Do us all a favor. When you're on the road, stay off the phone. A message from CTIA.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with Reputation Defender. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with Reputation Defender. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771. For your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with Reputation Defender. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
Well, certainly Loch Ness Monster, but obviously Roswell, has become a business, a profit-making business.
Yeah, do they have a Loch Ness, a Nessie festival?
They have. I'm not sure if it's current. It's basically a franchise, and so much so that other cities, I mean, there are even places in North America that have their own monster. There is an entertainment side to that as well. But yeah, the parallels between the Loch Ness Monster and ufology are definitely there. You know, earlier we were talking about ufology. There's a real... an attempt at a real science, but there's also this entertainment industry, and it's like, well, can one survive without the other? You know, that's tough to say. I mean, would enough people be interested to pursue the science if there was an audience? And without the science fueling some of these things, like, you know, anytime there is a legitimate statement from the Pentagon or a scientific case worth investigating, it gets hyped by the entertainment side. So is this some parasitic relationship? I'm not sure.
I have to agree with you to a certain extent that it would be nice to have some serious study of the subject. And I think there are people who take it seriously. I think there are serious ufologists who look at it objectively. I consider myself to be one. I look at the whole field from an objective perspective and try to catalog the various facets of it accordingly. But what worries me is when you get people who insist that it should be a science. All that seems to do to me is invite accusations of pseudoscience, because as you've already mentioned a couple of times, we really do lack the verifiable, scientifically valid material evidence to be able to scientifically study what is going on. We just don't have it. So if we're going to put together a bunch of scientists and try to pretend to do science, that's just inviting the accusations of pseudoscience. And then if you reject that, but insist that because you're scientists and you're treating it all seriously, and we're not going to call it UFOs anymore, we're going to call it UAPs, it almost sets up this sort of academic elitism that separates people from the study.
But isn't that kind of sort of like what happened when we went from flying saucers to UFO, and then UFO replaced flying saucers and maybe had a toxic atmosphere for obvious reasons? So therefore, UAP was another reason to separate itself from that.
Yeah, I think there's a parallel there. But what I'm worried about is that it is going to separate things from the average ufologist who maybe isn't a scientist but takes it seriously, and they're just going to get lumped in with all the tinfoil hat wearing fringe people, when really there's a whole bunch of people out here who do take it seriously who don't necessarily have scientific credentials. if we make it into this ivory tower thing, where only people who are scientists who have got degrees are allowed to touch the subject, I can see that there's going to be some kind of problem with that. What do you guys think?
You look at astronomy, and amateur astronomers have discovered a number of things. And in Clyde Tombaugh, he discovered Pluto. He also had a UFO sighting, so he's a perfect example of an overlap there. But I think if you, I don't know, let's just say that the government went full on in UFO studies, and they said, okay, we're going to have this team of scientists, and they're only going to study UFOs. Well, they would have downtime waiting for a new event to study. I think that's the wrong way to go. I think the best approach is to give scientists permission to study UFOs. There are many disciplines that are already out there. Astronomers were just mentioned, and have them incorporate. Let that be part of what they can record and look at.
Well, just consider the psychological aspect of it as well, and the social aspect of it, and the cultural aspect of it. These are huge parts of ufology that are really very important because of the way that they've shaped the way that we look at the world today. I mean, UFOs have become part of the background noise of modern civilization, from ancient aliens to the actual sightings and the folklore that goes along with it. And then you've got people like Valet who says, well, maybe there's some kind of an overall plan to this, some kind of a control system. I mean, how do you even begin to study that scientifically if all you're looking for is material evidence, you know, a block of strange alloy or something like that? I think we'd be missing out on so much if we only went that route and said, well, this is the only valid way we can do it.
Yeah, the idea that I was suggesting was that, you know, it becomes a legitimate part of other science projects, the field. I mean, you know, as it is now, a UFO sighting could interrupt and destroy the credibility of a scientific project. You know, it's easy to imagine that there's been some, and then they just choose to be quiet about it. They don't want to lose their funding. They don't want their study to be laughed at. Yeah, I think there needs to be the permission to study it. I don't think but I do think that individuals are going to definitely have to continue to pursue this on their own. You know, individual study and, you know, continue to support it.
Well, you're also painting the advantage of UAP. Oh, I'm investigating UAP. Oh, it's not UFOs, so they can go ahead with it.
Well, yeah, that's such a broad term because, you know, basically it could be an atmospheric disturbance, a glowing cloud. I mean, it's that broad. I guess it gives them some plausible deniability that they're looking for flying saucers. So,
yeah. Yeah, sure. Or does it? I think.
Guys, I still call it flying saucers. So there.
Yeah. And I applaud that because that's what we're looking for.
Let me hear that applause.
Well, you know,
thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I accept this award. No, that's not it.
The late Stanton Friedman, that was his preferred term because it was unambiguous that there could be some object that's unidentified. But a flying saucer was a structured craft in his estimation from outer space. So, and there have been other people. I heard the term unidentified spacecraft before, you know, and that's a big leap too. See, with the scientists, if you're going to persuade them to study, they just want to have to say, no, here's a sighting of an unexplained object. That's all they're going to want to admit to. They'll gather the data, the reports, but don't ask for them to say that they're hunting spacemen. They don't want that.
Hey, we're just about out of time, Kurt. Why don't you take a minute or so to tell listeners where they can find more of your stuff other than postings in our forum, of course.
At Blue Glory Lines, you'll find my work on the Cashliner case and some other UFO articles. And then for the exclusively the historical material from, say, 1957 and before, that's The Saucers That Time Forgot. And I hope that people will take a look at it, and I encourage you to add your comments and also give me feedback about what other kind of topics you'd like to see explored.
And as you see, Kurt Collins has 10,000 things to talk about. So he'll be coming back from time to time, and we'll catch up on old things and talk about new things. Speaking of finding things, you can find us on Twitter if you look for The Paracast. On Facebook, We have a Paracast fan club and a community group, whatever those things are, and I'm not going to define them because I can't. We also have a place where you can buy branded merchandise for Paracast listeners or anyone. It's called the Paracast Shop. If you go to the Paracast.shop, and you'll see the listings of our products, T-shirts, throw pillows, coffee mugs. I think we got some of those too. So check it out. You also want to check out the Paracast Plus. Why? Because we offer two great benefits. One, of course, is the version of this show free of the network ads with enhanced audio, higher bit rate, that sort of thing. We also have the After the Paracast podcast, where we just have great stuff. It's not just talking between myself and Randall. It is special guests, sometimes continuations of the main episode, and sometimes it's other stuff. So you definitely want to do that. In fact, Randall, it's going to be the second week with that ghost experience, right?
Yeah, right. We have Kevin Killen coming back for part two of Ghosts and Me.
Okay. More info, go to theparacast.plus, theparacast.plus. Kurt Collins, thanks for joining us on the Paracast.
Thank you.
Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Have you heard the warning from the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy? I'm talking about Dr. Joel Wallach. He says if you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, or other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. That's what he says. He has a free lecture revealing what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in his free lecture called Deadly Recipe. You want it free? Call him toll free at 855-79-YOUNG. You ready? 855-79-YOUNG. Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, says there's no reason why we shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there.